The Tom Woods Show, episode 453.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey everybody, Tom Woods here. I guess I'm in some kind of atrocity mood this week because today we're going to talk about the French Revolutionary Reign of Terror, a very interesting, although of course terrifying, period in the history of Western civilization. So we're going to get to that in a minute. Before we do that, I want to tell you about two expiring offers. They're expiring really fast. I'm talking to you in July 2015. I got two deals that are running out fast. Remember, I've been offering to publicize your blog for you. This applies to blogs that don't yet exist. If you haven't yet started one, go to tomwoods.com/publicity and find out how to get free publicity from me. It's just a simple matter of using my affiliate link if you get your hosting through Bluehost. Well, Bluehost is giving 42% off their regular hosting prices just through July 31st. So if you're planning to pull the trigger on that, I would say now's the time to do it so that you can snag that special pricing. And it's through my affiliate link that you can get that special pricing, tomwoods.com/blue. So get on that so you save a little dough. Check out tomwoods.com/publicity. And then second, you know what July is? July is the month of the Sedition Act of 1798. Terrible, right? Terrible. But the silver lining is that that is where we saw codified the Jeffersonian idea of nullification of unconstitutional federal laws. Well, I will send you a free signed copy of my book, Nullification, or if you prefer, the DVD documentary on nullification, if you join libertyclassroom.com before the end of the Sedition Act month, which is July. So head over to libertyclassroom.com and then just drop me a line either there or at tomwoods.com through the contact page to let me know if you'd rather have the book or the DVD. All right, today it's the Reign of Terror. We're talking about a period of time from 1793 to 1794. It takes place during the French Revolution. And what I'm doing here is sharing with you a lesson from a brand new Ron Paul curriculum course. It's been running actually this whole year, but I've only just now made it available a la carte through my own site, which is tomwoodshomeschool.com. On today's show notes page, which is tomwoods.com/453, I will link to how you can get this course. It's 165 video and audio files. If you prefer to listen, we've got audio files, but we also have video with PowerPoints on the screen and me on the screen, and it's super duper great. It's 165 rather than 180 because the last few weeks are dedicated to a term paper. If you are an adult, you don't have to do the term paper. You can just enjoy the lessons. And as you can hear from today's episode, I don't talk down to the students, so you will not feel insulted. You won't feel like I'm insulting your intelligence if you're an adult who wants to take this course. If you really want to know modern European history, then here's a great, easy, painless way to learn it. Learn it from me through my course. Find out how to get it at tomwoods.com/453. Now, at the very beginning of this lesson, you're going to hear I spend a few minutes recapping what was covered in the previous lesson. This is a very common feature of the Ron Paul curriculum. We do this because repetition is how people remember new material. Every single episode or every single lesson, we review the previous one. And then at the end of the week, we do a review of the entire week. That's how the information stays in your head. It's wonderful to listen to hundreds of videos and listen to all these files, but if you don't retain any of it, what was the point? But the repetition is what drills it into your head. So we have very good pedagogy taking place in the Ron Paul curriculum. Check it out at ronpaulhomeschool.com, and here we go. Hope you enjoy this. Hi, everybody. It's Tom Woods, and today we're going to talk about the Reign of Terror. Some disturbing material to be discussed today, to be sure. Let's go over what we covered last time. Last time we continued our discussion of the French Revolution. And I started off by talking to you about some other developments in the French Revolution, the abolition of the guild system, the replacement of the traditional French provincial lines by boundaries of brand new départements. We then talked about the effects on the church initially in the French Revolution. We talked about the confiscation of church properties. We talked about the forbidding of religious vows, actually making it an outlawed practice to take a religious vow, that a monastic vow that one might take when entering a monastery or a convent. Then the discussion turned to the civil constitution of the clergy of 1790, which made Catholic clergy into employees of the French government, in effect, because they were getting their salaries paid by the French government. The idea was that, obviously, this was a way to keep them on a short leash and make sure that they were not opponents of the revolution, because after all, where are they going to get their money if they turn against the government? So this was intended to make them loyal to the government. And we noted there were other provisions of the civil constitution as well. There was an oath that was required. And ultimately, about half of the Catholic clergy refused to comply. They could see that this was obviously an attempt on the part of the government to come to dominate the church, and they did not want to be a part of that. Moreover, Pope Pius VI was urging them not to comply. And so we had about half, as I say, of the clergy being what we call refractory priests or non-juring priests, as opposed to the constitutional or juring priests who complied with the requirements of the civil constitution of the clergy. We talked about the Constitution of 1791, in which the king is given only a suspensive veto over legislation, but that as 1792 rolls along, the revolution begins to gain further steam in a more radical direction. We see the actual abolition of the monarchy in France, that no longer will France have a king. France is declared to be a republic, and as a matter of fact, King Louis XVI is found to be guilty of crimes against France and is executed in January 1793. Moreover, in September of 1792, we have the September Massacres, in which a frenzied revolutionary mob goes through the prisons of Paris and begins executing people, about 1,100 of them, on the spot, the presumption being that these must be enemies of the revolution. Let's go get them, when most of them were just ordinary prisoners languishing in prison. So this was an indication that the revolution was taking a more irrational turn, a violent turn. And today we see the real culmination of the violent turn in what's called the Reign of Terror. The Reign of Terror is a period of French history that extends from September 1793 to July 1794. It was never officially declared in law. You won't find anything on the books that says the Reign of Terror is officially in effect. But it was nevertheless in effect. And of course, the fact that it wasn't officially declared in law in some ways made it more sinister, because it could be completely arbitrary. It wasn't limited by law. People engaged in the terror could engage in all kinds of activities more or less unconstrained by law. The major instrument of the terror is something called the Committee of Public Safety, which was established by the convention. Initially, the key figure overseeing the progress of the terror was a man named Danton, but ultimately and eventually and for the most part, it was a man named Maximilien Robespierre, pictured here on the slide. In September 1793, the Law of Suspects is approved, which grants sweeping powers to the committee to deal with, quote, those harboring counter-revolutionary designs, unquote. And of course, the term counter-revolutionary refers to those people who are opposed to the revolution. But it means something much broader than that, because a great many people who were executed in the Reign of Terror or were imprisoned, about 500,000 people were imprisoned at one time or another during the Reign of Terror, were people who had supported the French Revolution. So to call them counter-revolutionary is a little bit odd and disturbing. What could that mean, to call even supporters of the revolution counter-revolutionary? Well, if you're not in favor of what the revolution is doing right now, if you're not in favor of the crazed, violent turn the revolution has taken, this makes you counter-revolutionary. And the term began to be applied ever more broadly. If you were making a rosary, which was a series of beads with a crucifix on it that was used in praying the rosary, so the rosary is the physical thing and the prayers, which was a traditional Catholic devotion extending back hundreds of years, if you were found making one of these, this meant you were a counter-revolutionary or a fanatic, as they would sometimes say. If you were a non-juring priest, you were a counter-revolutionary. And as time went on in the Reign of Terror, if you were a priest at all, even if you were a constitutional priest, even if you were a juring priest, you were a counter-revolutionary. So this was such a broad category that it allowed the French government to punish practically anybody it wanted to punish. Most of the victims were political enemies, people who just opposed the one particular party or another in the French government, who weren't necessarily opposed to the whole French Revolution, of course. And two-thirds of the victims were from the Third Estate. Remember, the Third Estate is the people, and they're driving the French Revolution. Well, two-thirds of the victims of the Reign of Terror are going to belong to the Third Estate. Two-thirds of the victims are not going to be clergy or aristocracy. And all throughout this process, Frenchmen are urged to report to the authorities anyone they see exhibiting suspicious behavior or entertaining ideas that are not approved by the revolution. Part of this is a de-Christianization campaign. Of course, remember that the French Revolution is very much influenced by the Enlightenment, that what we need is reason, and human reason can solve our problems. We don't need tradition. We don't need institutions of long standing. All these things need to be held up to the harsh light of human reason. We just need to use our brains. We can create a society from scratch, from the ground up, just by using reason alone. Well, we have in the de-Christianization campaign an extremely radical expression of these Enlightenment ideas. By and large, the French Enlightenment was deeply opposed to the Catholic Church and really to Christianity in general. Some of them approved of the Ten Commandments, some of the basic moral precepts of Christianity, but they did not approve of the ritual, what they perceived as the intolerance of the Church, and so on. These things, they absolutely opposed. And this now spills over into quite a sweeping, radical, and even violent campaign of de-Christianization. One of the planks of de-Christianization involved the introduction of a new calendar into France. Now, of course, as you may know, the monk who many, many centuries ago initially figured the birth of Christ, the date of the birth of Christ, was off by several years. So it's actually sometimes said that Christ was born not in the year zero or the year one, but turns out he was born in more like 3 or 4 BC. That's neither here nor there. The point is that the idea of the Western calendar, the idea of it, is that it is based on and begins with the birth of Christ. Moreover, it is organized, as you well know, into 7-day weeks. This is meant to mirror the 7 days of creation, and then, of course, you have a Sunday on which people are expected to rest. Well, if you want to redesign a society from scratch, from the bottom up, this certainly will not do. We can't have people lingering on their Christian ideas. These are ridiculous ideas, according to the most radical of the French revolutionaries. They need to be expunged from the French consciousness. So that means we need to introduce a brand new calendar. This new calendar will be more rational than the old calendar with 28 days or 31 or 30 days. We'll have 20 30-day weeks. And in case you're wondering what the other 5 days will be, because 20 30-day weeks only gives you 360 days, well, they're going to have feasts to labor, you know, whatever. They're going to have 5 days with feasting to one abstract principle each day. Then they get 365 days. Each of these weeks in these months will have 10 days. It'll be 3 10-day weeks. So now no more mirroring the 7-day creation of Genesis 1, and no more Sunday, so people will not know what day are they supposed to rest. This was an attempt to obviously undermine the historic Christian foundations of France. Well, nobody really took this calendar seriously, except the most hardened revolutionary. No ordinary person was paying any attention whatsoever to this calendar. And eventually, Napoleon, whom we'll talk about in the next lesson, finally got rid of this calendar, realized nobody's using it. The whole thing was ridiculous to start with, so we're just going to get rid of it. But that's a clear part of this whole project. The idea is that we're going to date our calendar from the year we got rid of the monarchy and executed the king. That begins a whole new France starting over entirely from scratch. We're going to see that the distinction between juring and non-juring priests will now be dropped. Instead of saying that the non-juring priests get in trouble, but the juring priests, they're priests in good standing and they're citizens in good standing, no. Now all priests, juring or non-juring, are ordered to abjure their ordinations. Ordination is the process, the religious process by which they become priests. They must relinquish that, give that up, and give up their priesthood. Well, many of them would choose death instead. Clerical dress could not be worn. The garments that a priest would wear were now forbidden. You could not wear them at all. Churches are closed all over the place. Only in the remotest areas of France are churches going to remain open and the sacraments continuing to be offered. The word saint is removed from the names of towns and streets, just anything with saint in it. Statues of saints were actually guillotined. Churches were vandalized in various ways. And then in the Cathedral of Notre Dame, there was a special ceremony held enthroning the cult of reason. And there were goddesses of reason who were in there having a big ceremony to that would show how rational all the people involved were. Not surprisingly, during this period, we get the emigration, that is the leaving of France, emigration of tens of thousands of priests under these circumstances. They were very often impoverished as they were leaving, and interestingly enough, they were turned away by a number of Catholic countries, like Austria, for example, and by all the Italian states, because at this point, there isn't yet an Italy, per se. We'll get to that in a future lesson when we talk about Italian unification. There's just a handful of Italian states. They all turn these priests away, except the Papal States, which is the area of central Italy that is governed by the Pope. Spain helped, on the other hand, as did the Catholic cantons of Switzerland. But interestingly enough, the country that was the most generous to these desperate priests was England, which was not a Catholic country at all. Nearly 10,000 priests and 31 bishops moved to England, and England was publicly thanked for its generosity by Pope Pius VI. William Pitt, Prime Minister, said, "Few will ever forget the piety, the irreproachable conduct, the long and dolorous patience of these men, cast suddenly into the midst of a foreign people, different in its religion, its language, its manners and customs." In other words, these poor Frenchmen are now living among Englishmen who have a different religion from them, who speak a different language, have different manners and customs. And then he continues, "They won the respect and goodwill of all by a life of unvarying godliness and decency." And a number of historians have said that the English people's exposure to all these priests, who apparently lived edifying lives, helped to lead in the 19th century to the melting away of some of the anti-Catholic legislation that was on the books in England. Obviously, if all these priests had been wretches, it wouldn't have had this effect. So this seems to have been one of the consequences of the mingling of all these priests throughout English society. I want to talk now about some of the atrocities. These are just a handful of the atrocities associated with the Reign of Terror. And this is a way in which, by the way, subsequent revolutions in the Western world really, and not just the Western world, also in China, copied not the American example of the American Revolution, but really copied the French example of trying to remake an entire society, and people who aren't on board with remaking an entire society and giving up all their traditions are simply going to be murdered. And so the French really paved the way in this regard. I want to begin with the drownings at Nantes. And here I'm reading from the work of a of a late friend of mine, Michael. Well, his name is Michael Davis, but it's spelled D-A-V-I-E-S, but it was pronounced Davis, even though everybody during his life pronounced it Davies. I think he lost heart trying to correct people after a while, so he just stopped bothering. Anyway, talking about the drownings at Nantes, we have this. In cities such as Nantes, the prisons were packed with Catholics, three or four times the number for which they had been built. The squalor and the suffering this caused cannot be imagined. Old and young, men, women, and children were crammed together in conditions devoid of the minimum requirements of decency, sanitation, or hygiene. Epidemics caused hundreds of deaths each day. Some bodies were thrown into the River Loire. Others were left to decompose among the barely living. Republican doctors who visited the prison made known their horror at what they found. The Republican or revolutionary excuse was that the guillotine could not eliminate the enemies of liberty, as they were called, at a sufficiently swift and economic rate. The bestial Jean-Baptiste Carrier was appointed representative on mission at Nantes on 23rd September and invested with extraordinary powers which gave him carte blanche to adopt any measures that he saw fit to deal with counter-revolutionaries. The measure that he saw fit to adopt to overcome the problem of prison overcrowding was to initiate the notorious drownings at Nantes. Prisoners tied together in pairs were placed in flat-bottomed barges. Holes had been drilled in the sides and were boarded over until the barges reached the middle of the river, when the executioner boatmen would remove the boards and jump into boats that were alongside, from which they watched their victims drown. So in other words, you see, there are boats that have holes in them that are boarded up. The holes are boarded up so that the barges can float. But then once they get out into the water, then the executioners move these boards so that the holes are now exposed so that the boats will fill with water and drown. So the executioner boatman would remove the boards and jump into boats that were alongside from which they watched their victims drown. These drownings were at first confined to priests and carried out surreptitiously at night, beginning with 90 priests on 19th November 1793. But they soon took place in broad daylight and were regarded as a form of entertainment. At least 5,000 Catholics, priests, old men, young men, women, and children, were tied together two by two, taken out into the River Loire in boatloads, and drowned. The most depraved refinement of the drownings was the so-called Republican marriage, in which a man and a woman would be stripped naked, tied together, ridiculed, and then thrown into the Loire. The Loire was referred to by Republican humorists as the national swimming pool, and the drownings were termed patriotic baptisms. Carrier objected to trials as a waste of time. The very fact of being arrested must be considered proof of guilt. All these suspects, he commanded a judge, must be eliminated in a couple of hours, or I will have you and your colleagues shot. He also said, "Never have I had so much amusement as in seeing the last grimaces of priests as they die." Now, you may wonder what happened to the principle of religious toleration that we associate with the Enlightenment. Well, that is a good question. Let me say a brief word about the martyrs of Compiègne, and there are so many examples here that I could give. I choose these people almost at random. But here, these were the Carmelites of Compiègne. Carmelites is that's an order of nuns. And this particular Carmelite community was sentenced to death because these nuns remained together as a community after their convent had been suppressed by the French government. And so one of the sisters asked, why are they being harassed? Why are they being sentenced? What exactly are they guilty of? And they were told by a judge of one of these revolutionary tribunals that they were being condemned for fanaticism. Well, what do they mean by fanaticism? And he says, "Your fanaticism is your foolish attachment to your stupid religious practices." Well, each one of them, one by one, was taken to the scaffold, and they all sang hymns until the last one of them was silenced. Typically, by the way, these executioners were not themselves as dignified when they, as often happened, wound up on the wrong side of the Reign of Terror, and they wound up on the scaffold. They were all screaming for their lives. But these people typically went to their deaths in an extraordinarily and impressively dignified way. Then we have the shootings at Angers. And the shootings at Angers, the victims of the shootings at Angers are referred to as the martyrs of Avrier. Angers is a city in France, and it could not cope with the number of prisoners. So again, let me read to you from Davis. In the city of Angers, the guillotine was constantly in use, but it could not cope with the number of prisoners. The Republicans investigated several means of mass killings, including the possibility of poisoning wells or fabricating a poisoned gas to asphyxiate the Vendeans. But at Angers, it was decided that mass shootings would be the most cost-effective method. So we read this. Catholics were marched outside the town in batches of 400. They were tied together in pairs, and the pairs linked by a long rope. Ditches had been dug on the previous evening. The victims were lined up in batches of 50 and then shot so that they fell into the ditches. Many were only wounded, and they were finished off with swords and bayonets. Half the victims were women. This became a standard method of execution for Catholic prisoners. At least 2,000 were murdered in this way between January and April 1794. The field where they died is now known as the Field of the Martyrs of Avrier, and the track that leads to it as the Path of Silence. And as a matter of fact, in February 1984, Pope John Paul II beatified 100 of these martyrs of Avrier, which beatified is the last stage before canonization, which is the declaring of someone to be a saint. By 1794, Danton, who had been in charge of the Reign of Terror in the early stages, began speaking out against it. He was arrested on March 31st, 1794, and he told his fellow prisoners, "Gentlemen, I had hoped to get you all out of this place. Unfortunately, I'm now shut up in it with you." Robespierre forced the convention to pass a decree forbidding Danton from defending himself. And so Danton stood up and said, "You are murderers, murderers, vile Robespierre. You too will go to the scaffold. You will follow me, Robespierre." And indeed, he would, as we'll see in a second. June 10th, 1794, Robespierre forces the passage of a law ending all defense for people on trial for their lives before a revolutionary tribunal. If you're on trial for your life, you get no defense. The terror will take care of you. In the form of execution. Robespierre had become a dictator, and finally, the French regime turned against him. The rest of the regime turned against him, and Robespierre himself was executed on 9th Thermidor. Thermidor is one of the months in this crazy French revolutionary calendar, so we refer to this period as the Thermidorian reaction, that finally enough was enough. The Reign of Terror must be put to an end, and Robespierre himself was put to an end. Thanks for watching.
All right, everybody. Once again, I am going to ask for your indulgence here if I do just one thing, because as you know, working on this project almost killed me. It was so much work to make these 400 or so videos that I made for the curriculum. This is Western Civilization from 1493, and I'd just like to go through what I covered in this course, and you just won't believe how much of it there is. So I talked about the Protestant Reformation. That's where I began. The German Reformation, other Protestant figures who may be less well known than Martin Luther. I then talked about John Calvin. The English Reformation is, I think, one of the most interesting topics in all of European history. Then the Catholic Reformation. I talked about Charles V, Philip II, the French Wars of Religion. I had one student say, "The French Wars of Religion are incredibly complicated, and somehow you managed to explain it so that it seemed easy. Like I was able to understand it." Well, I appreciate that. We talk about Queen Elizabeth, talked about the 30 Years' War, the English Civil War, the Levellers, who were some of the first full-fledged, fully spelled out libertarians. Oliver Cromwell, the Glorious Revolution, two lessons on John Locke. If some of these people and events are just names to you, but you feel like, I really should know this stuff. Here's the painless way to get it. We talk about France before Louis XIV. We talk about revolt in Spain, the rise of constitutionalism, also the rise of absolutism, then a lesson on mercantilism, two lessons on Louis XIV, the War of the Spanish Succession, then talking about the Hohenzollerns, the Habsburgs, Peter the Great in Russia. I talk about European art during this time. Three lessons on the Scientific Revolution. Two lessons on the Enlightenment. One lesson on Adam Smith. Two lessons on Europe in the 18th century. Then a lesson on enlightened absolutism. Three lessons on the American Revolution as an important event in Western civilization. Two lessons on the French Revolution. Then, of course, the one on the Reign of Terror you heard today. Two lessons on Napoleon. A comparison between the American and French revolutions, a lesson on Edmund Burke and the French Revolution, a lesson on Mary Wollstonecraft and the rights of women, two lessons on the Industrial Revolution, two lessons on slavery and the abolition of slavery, a lesson on what was the source of Western prosperity. Then I cover the Congress of Vienna, the conservative reaction, 1815 to 1830, the growth of state education, education without the state, the case of England, four lessons on the growth of classical liberalism, which, of course, eventually blossoms into libertarianism. Then socialism, neoclassicism, romanticism, the revolutions of 1830, the revolutions of 1848. Four lessons on Marxism. Then naturalism, the Crimean War, the unification of Italy, the unification of Germany, the Second Industrial Revolution. Then Southeastern Europe, new states emerge. France and England in the late 19th century, Germany, Austria-Hungary, and Russia, then European imperialism, then a lesson on did the West grow rich through imperialism? The answer may surprise you. Two lessons on modernism, one on the coming of World War I, three on World War I, then the Paris Peace Conference, then four lessons on the Russian Revolution. I did an episode of this show on the Russian Revolution, and it was drawn in part from the material in this course. Then, the broken world of the interwar period, communists, fascists, and others, a lecture on the Nazis, then the 1930s and the coming of war in Europe, then a bunch of lessons on World War II and the Holocaust, then, actually it's a whole bunch of lessons on that, then the Nuremberg trials, the origins of the Cold War, talk about the economic miracle, if we look at what happened in West Germany, for example, decolonization, European Union and Cold War, the Cold War from the 50s to the 70s, then art and architecture in the 20th century, then the world of the 60s, then the Middle East and Western civilization to the 70s, then the Soviet Union from Brezhnev to Gorbachev, then the collapse of the Soviet regime, then migration, economics, nationalism, ethnic cleansing, the West and the rise of Asia, and then finally lessons, liberty, technology, society, and the state. I killed myself creating these courses, so check them out. The ways to get them are at tomwoods.com. Ways to get this particular course and all three of my courses for the Ron Paul curriculum are at tomwoods.com/453. Of course, you can join the Ron Paul curriculum through ronpaulhomeschool.com. That's one way to get them. And if you join specifically, if you enter the site through ronpaulhomeschool.com, you get free bonuses that you get only if you enter the site that way. Details at tomwoods.com/453. You can get the course at tomwoodshomeschool.com a la carte, and you can get the course as a supporting listener of the show at the gold and platinum levels through supportinglisteners.com. And all you supporting listeners at the gold and silver, the gold and platinum levels, drop me a line at tomwoods.com on the contact page. If you want this course, we'll send you your login as soon as we hear from you. Because you are entitled to all these courses as a member of the Supporting Listener Program at those levels. All right, that's it for today. Remember, get that blog up and running. Use that Bluehost discount that you'll get through tomwoods.com/blue. It's good only through July 31st. So get cracking on that and check out tomwoods.com/publicity for how you can get free publicity from me. All right, you think that's enough links for one episode? You think I've done enough of that? All the stuff I talked about just now, you will find at tomwoods.com/453. Thanks for listening. See you next week.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.